And thanks again to everyone that's read, helped us open the meeting. I take this opportunity to welcome those that have joined us since we first started. Warm welcome to any visitors and a huge welcome to anybody that might be new to NA with us tonight. We hope you're going to hear something that's going to encourage you to keep coming back. Okay, guys, just to let you know, we do have a speaker this evening. The meeting is being recorded, but the only piece that will be saved will be the speaker themselves. They're going to share their experience, strength, and hope with us. Journey to into and through Narcotics Anonymous, next 40 or 45 minutes, whatever they're comfortable with. And I'm going to hand you over to Jay, who's going to introduce them. So, Jay, over to you.
I'm an addict. My name is Jay.
Hello, Jay.
Hello, Jay.
I don't remember when I met this individual, but he's been part of my recovery for at least the last 15 to 20 years. And we've had the opportunity to go to meetings together, break bread together in multiple places, conventions. He's somebody I look forward to seeing in meetings now that when he wound up, I was talking to him because I had already gone virtual, and I was telling him that he'd come and join us, that he'd find people here that he would like. And he did. And he started coming to meetings, and then the pandemic happened. And the story's been written. And I look forward to seeing him in meetings all over the world, because he does go to meetings all over the world. And I think he's found a home in the virtual meetings. He's celebrating, but just celebrated a major milestone. And it's hard to believe that it has been that long. But it's hard for me to believe that I've been clean as long as I have been clean. I'm a few years behind him. So without further ado, Spider, would you share with us?
Of course, I'm Spider-Man addict.
Hello,
Hi,
Spider.
Spider.
Spider. Whoa.
Jay's got it right. The thing is I have found a home in Higman and some other places, which I wouldn't have unless he prodded me to come, because I was hesitant at best. Yeah, I think it, I personally believe I was born an addict or with addictive tendencies, because when I look back, it shows how it manifested itself very early in my life. I think the first escape I had was cartoons and comic books and anything to make it where I didn't have to be me. I didn't, I don't know that I necessarily fit in anywhere, even as a little kid. I mean, my first experience with substances was someplace between 4.5 and 5. You'd throw a cigarette butt out the window of your car, and I'd run over and grab the cigarette at 4 and pick it up and finish it, because I wanted to be like my older brother or my daddy, who smoked cigarettes. And I thought that was cool. Of course, if my mom caught me, she'd beat my ass, but I still did it. And I stumbled into into substances by accident. I didn't realize there was booze in the glass that I was drinking, but all of a sudden the cartoons looked a lot better. So, I would be more than happy to offer to clean up after my parents had a party, because there would be booze left behind. And I was a little kid, and there was no way I was going to get my hands on it otherwise. But the biggest thing is I like the change. I like the mood change. I like not having to be me. And I'm not really sure why that was, but I For the longest time, I thought my real parents were going to come along and take me away, because I didn't seem to fit into the household that I was in. The nearest sibling to my age was 5 years older than me, and the next one was 10 years older. So I'm pretty sure I was a mistake. I know that my mom had me when she was probably someplace between 43 and 45 years old. So I'm pretty sure I was a surprise. My parents tried stuff with me that they didn't try with my siblings, and they found it really quick. It didn't work anyways. They tried talking to me, and that didn't work. And it went from talking to me to grabbing what was ever on the counter to swing at me. And I don't think they were necessarily trying to be abusive as much as they were frustrated with the fact that I didn't respond like my siblings did. And I never really have. I never, it was extremely hard for them to put the fear of God in me because I just didn't care. My dad would threaten me with a whipping, and I'm like, go ahead. Let's just get it out of the way. And there were some older kids in the neighborhood that turned me on to alcohol when I was probably 5 or 6, and I liked it. And I liked the fact that I didn't have to be me for whatever period of time that was. And I thought that was the best thing in the world. And that got me started. And I mean, I think that my first blackout was 11. My first OD was at 15. I was buying for other people so that I could, so that they'd talk to me, is basically what it came down to. The whole reason that I sell drugs was so that somebody would talk to me, because I didn't have friends necessarily otherwise. I was a little scrawny thing, and I used to get my ass handed to me pretty much daily after school. But once I was able to do something for the older boys, all of a sudden I was under their protection, which was really nice. It's kind of scary to be 7 or 8 years old and have to have some 14 and 15-year-old boys around you to protect you from your neighbors, because your neighbors are beating your ass on a regular basis. And I didn't necessarily understand how to fight back, so I would usually take a beating. And onward we would go to the next thing. I would, and this is a famous phrase that I know a lot of my friends have heard. If he just apply himself, he'd do so much better. He's an intelligent child. And they deemed me as I had some learning disabilities, but they didn't call it back. They called me slow back then, but I didn't have to go into the special classes. And my parents had me tutored so I could stay in the grade I was in. There's a bunch of stuff that happened to me in early childhood that, probably somebody should have sat me down and tried to explain it to me, but they didn't bother. They tried to put me in grade school early, and that didn't work out. So the first 4 months of kindergarten I was there, and the last 4 months of it, I was gone. They shipped me off to a relative out of state, which when I got back was really hard to explain to my peers. And I did all the crazy stuff. I drove cars when I probably shouldn't have drove cars, and I drove motorcycles when I probably shouldn't have drove motorcycles, and I did a lot of crazy stuff, and I suffered a lot of consequences for it. But amazingly, I didn't break any bones in the process. So that kind of gave me that invincible, unbreakable thing where I'd get bruised, but I wouldn't get destroyed. And my loving mother introduced me to liquid opiates at 8. And by 9, I was grabbing that bottle by myself and helping myself to it. And, somebody older had some booze, and we mixed the booze with the opiates, and all of a sudden it was like it was off to the races. I couldn't get enough of that stuff. And it basically comes down to I didn't feel comfortable in my own skin when I wasn't high. And you could pretty much drop me anywhere with the money in my pocket, and I would be high within 2 or 3 hours because I had the gift of gab. I was able to get people to do stuff for me that they shouldn't do. I can remember being 15 and talking to a guy at a convenience store into selling me a case of beer with no ID, and he did it, and then I got caught by the cops and got brought home, and there were no major consequences for it. But when I look back at that, that's some pretty crazy shit. I'm in a strange town that I don't know anybody. I'm buying beer from some convenience store that I don't really know him, and I'm sitting on the corner drinking until the cops get me. God, things could have gone a hell of a lot wrong from there, but they didn't. I did, like some other people have said, I didn't lose cars and houses and wives and businesses and whatnot because I wasn't legal for that long. I mean, I can remember getting a W-2 one year when I think I was 17, and I didn't have anything to show for it because all that money went for drugs. By like 15, I was getting up in the morning and it was wake and bake. Before I got to school, during school, at work, after work, often as I possibly could. And somehow I managed not to get caught. Or if I did get caught, what would happen is somebody would enable me and I'd get out of it. I wouldn't suffer any major consequence. So that just made that invincible shit keep going. So at the ripe old age of 18, some friends of mine who I used to use with got clean and came and found me and said, "We got this thing to show you." And I said, "Why don't you guys mind your own damn business?" And I said, "Well, I think this would really help you." And I said, "I don't think it will." I was very resistant to it. They talked me into going to a meeting. I walked in the meeting. There were 20, 25 people in the room, and I knew everybody but two of them. And I was like, "Is this Misfits Anonymous?" Nope. It was an AA meeting. And I walked up to one of the women, and I was like, "What are you doing here?" She said, "Wait on you." And they read the readings for the night, and I was like, "How do these people know so much?" And I dove into attending meetings, and I did that for a couple of weeks, and then that wasn't necessarily working out, and I had some people sit me down and tell me that I needed more than what the program could give me. And they suggested that, maybe I get assessed for treatment. And when I got assessed and they found me a bed, and I went to detox that day, and they started to admit my father because he was intoxicated. And I went, "No, it's me over here." I thought I was a 28-day program until they had taken my clothes and put me in pajamas. And then I was informed that it was a "you get out of here when it's time" program, which for me turned into 47 days in-house. And I can remember treatment was not easy for me because I again refused to cooperate. And the whole thing about pack your bags, time for you to leave. I was like, "Fine, I'll go home." And they said, "Well, we fixed it, so you can't go home. You can't go to your brother's. Basically, you don't have any place to go if you leave here." So I would stay, and I learned a lot. And I would have learned a lot more if I wasn't so fucking stubborn. And after I finished inpatient, I did outpatient for about 8 or 9 months. And I really think that made a huge difference in my recovery. When I get back to the meetings, I was already established. At that time, there were only a couple meetings in the city I was in. So when we weren't at meetings, we were hanging out with each other. And I kind of embraced the recovery lifestyle, which basically meant that that I worked with other addicts, I played with other addicts, I did everything with other addicts, and I did service, I did all that stuff for the first 5 or 6 years, and then actually at about 4 years clean, I got really sick, and it was really hard for me to be in the cold weather. It was very hard for me to go outside, and I pretty much was housebound for a lot of the time. And somehow there was some discussion, but I had a bring some stuff down to Florida for my folks, and I came down here and I looked for work and I found three jobs in 4 days, and I went home and told my wife that we're going to move, and she said, no, we're not. And then there was we got about 4 inches, or we had about 4 feet of snow in the next month. She said, when are we leaving? And with just under 7 years clean, I came to Florida. And it was culture shock because I left a place where there's between someplace between 1,500 and 3,000 people in recovery, and I got to Florida and there were 11. And that was it. There was one NA meeting in Orlando. They met 2 nights a week, and that was it. And we went, I went to the other fellowship, and there wasn't at that time, we're talking probably 1982, 1983, there wasn't any animosity between the fellowships. Didn't really care where you went. I mean, yes, there were some staunch meetings that were really rigid, and if you walked in and said you were ENDA, they would end you out the door. But for the most part, nobody really cared about it. It was the more important thing was that, you stay clean. And I got involved in service down here, and that didn't last very long because I was told basically what to do. And anybody that knows me really well knows that I don't follow direction really well, and I sure in the hell don't like being told to do anything. So, needless to say, I wasn't in service very long. I was in service at a group level, but I tried to go into, I think I was a PI chair until I pissed somebody off, and then they impeached me. So that resolved that issue. But I did a lot of service on a group level, and there wasn't a lot of activities. Nobody was really doing anything, and I was like, so I instigated campouts on a regular basis and trips to the Keys and doing other stuff in recovery, and had a great time at it. I was thinking about it today, how many people that I've known over the last couple of decades that aren't here anymore. There's a whole shitload of people that passed way before their time. But what's happening is that, I mean, I got stagnant here. It got to the point where I was the guy with the most clean time pretty much every place I went, with the exception of a couple of guys in West Florida and a guy farther south than me, and that was it. Nobody else had any major amounts of clean time. And major amounts of clean time back then was 7 years. Didn't see anybody with 20. The other fellowship, you'd see somebody with 20 or 30, but they were like 80 by that time. So there wasn't any young people that had any time. And, I went where I needed to go. If there wasn't an NA meeting, I would take on whatever other meeting I could get to that was 12-step based. And nobody said I was a traitor, and we didn't get the one world, one message crap. And, I wanted to know why nobody was talking about steps and traditions. I had open discussion meetings. I'm like, why aren't we talking about this? And this before any of the, it's pretty much before any of the literature. The only thing we had was a little white book, and that was pretty much basic. And I wasn't really concerned with the literature. We had the IPs and we had the white book, and that was about it. And that seemed to cover everything. And, I was living my life, and I brought my wife with me when I moved down here. We weren't married yet, but we got married when we got down here. First part of this month, we celebrated 41 years of marriage and 46 years together. She's the love of my life. I can't see life without her. But that doesn't mean it's all, rainbows and flowers, because it wasn't. There's been, we've had our ups and downs. We've talked about divorce probably 7 to 10 times in the last 40 years. And it was usually because we forgot that we were in a relationship. We forgot that you have to cultivate those things or they don't cultivate themselves. And I got injured right after I moved down here, and I didn't heed the warning that this of what was coming, and I got injured a couple times down here pretty bad, and still wouldn't pay attention. And I was hoping my body would hold up to what till I was like 70 something, but I'd have back surgery when I was 46, and it took 2.5 years to heal from that, and I just had it again 5 years or 5 years ago to repair something else. I mean, I pretty much wound up with everything my folks had, and I'm a diabetic now. I've got skin cancer, I got glaucoma, I have congenital heart failure, I have a device in my heart. What else is there's a bunch of shit wrong with me, but you know what? It's all manageable in recovery because I have other friends that have the same type of shit. Without going on to online meetings, I would have never met my current sponsor. I wouldn't have met a bunch of my peers. It can get really sketchy when you're the guy with the most clean time and there's nobody else to bounce shit off of. And since coming online in 2018, I've found all that. I found a couple of meetings on illness and recovery that are very helpful for me. I found a group of guys and gals that I'm not the guy with the most clean time. I'm like in the middle. And there's a bunch, I was talking to somebody before the meeting, a friend of mine just celebrated 57 years on the 11th of March, which I just think that's totally amazing. It might be 58. I'm not sure if it's seven. Anyways, the idea is there are people here that are not nearly dead and have a bunch of time clean. My clean date is March 18th, 1976. So that tells you that I have 50 years clean. I'm 68 years old. I'm learning I've just had a really bad bout with being anemic. I'm learning how to deal with that. There's been a bunch of experiences in the last couple of years that have really been trying for me, but at no time did the thought of let's go out and get high come into play, or let's abuse our medication come into play. I had to start taking medication early on in recovery. And a friend of mine explained it to me and said, if it's one every 4 hours, it's one every 4 hours. If you're doing two every 3 hours, you need to go get a white chip. If you're going to abuse your medication, then understand there's going to be consequences. And that stuck in my head. And I made the mistakes. I was in a relationship with a woman at one time that convinced me I needed to flush all my meds down the toilet, and I did. And it about fucking killed me. I did a lot of stuff to please other people, even in recovery, and I found out that I have to take care of myself and I have to be my own advocate. And if I'm not, it's my own fucking fault. So I've become my own advocate on a medical stance. I mean, I was in a meeting one night, and I think it was on here, and somebody's talking about having, nine different specialists that they see, and I was like, wow, that's crazy. Nine, holy crap. And then I counted mine up and I have eight. So, can't be throwing no stones. NA has really, really saved my life. Online meetings have made it much easier for me to stay clean. There have been times in the last 5 years where I couldn't go to a meeting because I was shaking so bad, I felt embarrassed because I was having severe tremors. I started having heart problems a couple years ago, and two ablations later, I'm able to walk around and not get winded and not have fluid on the lungs and not have a bunch of stuff going on. But it's all because I had other people to talk to in recovery and go, this is what's going on. Have you ever had this experience? Or I'd hear somebody in the meeting talking about that experience, and I'd be picking their brain after the meeting, going, Hey, how do you deal with this? Now, I just did it the other day. They're trying to fix the muscles in my hips that are all screwed up. And I went to another addict and said, "Listen, I understand you've had this procedure done. What do you think?" And she's like, "Well, it's going to be like this for a while." And that's the beauty of recovery is going to another person in the meeting or after the meeting that's had experiences that you're experiencing and being able to go to them and go, "I don't understand how to do this. Can you help me?" And I've had that attitude pretty much from the onset. I mean, in way early recovery, when I was a couple months into recovery, and I was sitting in the back of a meeting, and this woman walks up and says, "I think you probably need to go get some phone numbers." And I'm like, "Well, I'm waiting for people to come in and introduce themselves." And she says, "I think you need to get up off your ass and do it now." And I said, "Who's going to make me?" And she's going, "If I need to bitch slap you, I will." And I said, "Yes, ma'am, not a problem. I was getting up and getting phone numbers." It took a little while for me to get this because I didn't understand. It's like anything else. If I don't have the experience, then I have to learn it from somebody else. And I was very fortunate to have very good sponsors in the beginning that really didn't tolerate any of my shenanigans. You know? I was taught that you work the steps when you need to work the steps and when you want to work the steps, not when you need to work them, but when you want to work them, because it's much easier. Because when you need to work them, it doesn't work that well. I was taught that I don't, it's not one and done. I don't do the 12 steps and then I'm done. No, I do the 12 steps and then I come around and do the 12 steps and then I do the 12 and I do the traditions and I do that stuff because I want to be educated. The steps don't change. Never have. But my attitude and my behavior changes every time I do it because it's different now. And I was taught that when you intuitively know what step applies in any situation in your life, you probably don't have to work that step anymore. But I work them in my life anyways. I know when I'm powerless. I know when I need to hand it off to a higher power. I know when I'm being insane. I know when it's time for an inventory. You know, anytime I'm reaching out and helping another addict, I'm working some of those steps. This all gets ingrained into your system, whether you fucking like it or not. Or not. I mean, I know plenty of people that have survived 10 or 15 years on the first three steps, but you can tell there's something fucking missing. There's nothing missing with me. I know this stuff. You know, does that mean I can sit on my laurels at 50 years? Not really. You know, is it about substances anymore? No, it's about behaviors now. You know, I was hoping that stuff like self-doubt would be gone. I got news for you. At 50 years, my self-doubt is still here. My character defects are still here. The difference is I don't act on them as readily as I once did. And if I have a problem with one, I'm on the phone talking to somebody going, "Hey, how'd you deal with this? Can you help me?" I don't ever want to get unteachable or that I think I have all the answers. Because if I do, I'm fucked. Because that means the disease has a hold of me again. You know? It's not about substance anymore. It's about my behavior. It's about my addictedness. How is my addiction manifesting itself in my life on a daily basis? And am I falling for that trap? And I don't fall for it much anymore. You know, I have to take medication now to monitor my sugar. I take it so that I can eat. I take it so I can do bodily functions that I used to take for granted that won't work unless I have some help with it. And I tell my doctors I have an adverse reaction to opiates. Please don't hesitate to knock my ass down when you're doing a procedure. I don't want to wake up on the table. I did early on because I thought that it would be better. I thought that it would be better if I didn't tell him, and I woke up on the table like four or five times during the procedure back in 1980. I don't ever want to experience that again. So I'm responsible about it now, and I tell him, If this requires me being knocked out, knock me out. I had a procedure about 3 weeks ago where the guy that I was, they were doing an endoscopy and a fluoroscopy, and the guy was setting up the tube, and he's watching me, and I'm watching him, and he's going, he's watching me. And I was like, yeah, I'm really interested to see what you're about to do to me. And the next thing I know, the nurse is over going, you're going to feel a burning sensation. And then it was 2 hours later. So obviously, I made somebody nervous, but they took care of me, knocked me out like normal. And I'm still healing from that procedure. There are things that happen during procedures that it just takes a while for shit to heal. But ask anybody that knows me, and they'll tell you that I'm pretty candid about everything that's going on with me. And am I opinionated? Fuck yes, I'm opinionated. I have lots of opinions. Am I biased? I sure am. I'm biased that this program's been working for me for 50 fucking years. Two of my friends from the old days, I mean, I haven't seen them in 50, in 45 years, said, who would have thought you would have made it this long? Well, I didn't think I was going to make it this long. But something's working, and I give great credit to the creator because it tolerates me, or it has a strange way of getting my attention. But it hasn't gone anywhere. My higher power has never left me, but I've left my higher power many times because I thought I had this. And today I know I don't have this. I have to rely on other people, on my higher power, and myself to do what is necessary to keep me alive and keep me going. But I can't do it alone. Don't fall for that trap. That's why it's a we program, not a me program. So that's enough out of me. Thanks for letting me share.